got bad. Now the boat won't float. I don't like it. I'm too proud to be poor.
Hello, folks, and welcome to the May 2nd, 2015 edition of the World Labor Hour here on WEFT Champaign. We're broadcasting at 90.1 on the FM dial and streaming at weft.org. The views and opinions expressed here are those of the speakers and do not necessarily represent those of WEFT, its board of directors, associates, station manager, or Prairie Air Incorporated. And now here's Gus with some of our underwriting.
This hour of programming is brought to you in part by Central Illinois' Jobs with Justice, a coalition of union and community groups working for economic justice and workers' rights. Central Illinois' Jobs with Justice holds regular meetings on the third Saturday of every month at 9:30 a.m. at Channing Murray Foundation, 1209 West Oregon, Urbana. For more information, visit www.centralillinoisjobswithjustice.org. Programming on the World Labor Hour is supported in part by listeners of WEFT and Decatur attorney Bill Faber, who believes that the mission of the law is the safety of the people. Bill Faber proudly supports the World Labor Hour. The Illinois World Labor Hour is supported in part by listeners of WEFT and by the AFL-CIO of Champaign County. The AFL-CIO represents the interests of more than 7,000 workers in Champaign County and more than 13 million workers nationwide. Recognizing that strong workers build strong communities, the AFL-CIO is proud to support community radio in East Central Illinois. The Graduate Employees Organization Union, GEO, at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign strives to not only democratically represent graduate employees, but also to give solidarity and support to other unions, organizations, and workers engaged in the struggle for social justice, both on and off campus. The GEO is proud to support the World Labor Hour on WEFT Community Radio.
Excellent, excellent. And yesterday, the GEO and many of the other unions on campus were involved with a little rally over at the alma mater, May 1st, May Day rally. It happened at noon, and we're going to go to a little bit of audio from that. Is that correct? All right, go ahead. Let that run.
It is May Day. Let's get some shout-outs right now. Let's do a roll call. Big shout-out to AFL-CIO Champaign County.
Yeah! Woo!
The American Federation of State and Local Employees, Local 698.
Woo!
American Federation of State and Local Employees, Local 3700.
Woo!
The Campus Faculty Association, Local 6546.
Woo!
You are currently fighting the university right now for their contract, and we will support them 100% against the administration.
Woo!
The Campus Labor Coalition,
yeah,
which is all of us, really. It's all of us together fighting against this system. The Central Illinois Jobs with Justice.
Yeah.
Champaign Urbana Citizens for Peace and Justice.
Yeah.
Gave a great, great talk last night about what's going on with the jail situation in Champaign County. We are continuing to fight that as well.
Yeah.
Graduate Employees Organization,
yeah,
Local 6300, GEO.
Showing.
I love it. So y'all, again, like I said, today is going to be a very exciting day. We're going to continue to keep this intensity up. We have to recognize that this day is not just for us. It's for all workers across the state, across
excited
the country.
For my day. Super excited. I love your shirt.
Discrimination, inequality. The masses are waiting. The people are waiting. Now we just have to anger them.
This
so
will be your background sign
change
for you.
Yeah.
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 I'm
going
to be your background. 654. You want me to hold your backpack, please? Put it on my back. Then we'll forget it.
United, we'll never be defeated. The workers, united, will never be defeated. the workers united will never be defeated.
Kate Schneider from CFA Local 6546.
Thank you, sisters and brothers, on this beautiful May Day here under the alma mater. Today's the 129th anniversary of May Day. 129. Today is the 129th anniversary of May Day. I'm a historian, so I have to say that. Woo! It's remembered internationally as a way to celebrate working people and highlight our struggles, past and present, here under the outstretched arms of alma mater and her children. Learning and labor. We celebrate the grown-up status as unionists and as educators at this great university. We also affirm our solidarity in face of unprecedented threats to our mission. As teachers and researchers and clinical faculty, we build the future of this state and this community every day. But our governor has other ideas. He wants us to abandon our mission and be part of his race to the bottom. Cuts in education, student aid, university support, and ultimately the de facto privatization of a great public university. That is how he envisages the future. As a community, on May Day, we say, enough is enough. Right. We refuse to be part of this race in the wrong direction. We are ready to fight for the future of this state and the future of our students. That is our mission as members of the union at the University of Illinois, and we invite everyone, especially our union sisters and brothers here, and in the community to join us for this struggle. Thank you.
All right, wonderful. That started off with, of course, our very own Gus Wood mentioning some of the groups that were out there.
Yeah, trying to get the crowd hype, man. The roll call usually is popular, and I know, you know, we had a lot more people coming out as it went on, so it kind of swelled up a lot after the first 15 minutes, so yeah.
Excellent. And that last speaker was,
That was Dorte Schneider. She's now the communications chair for the non-tenure track union Local 6546. She's been a lecturer in the history department for a very long time, so it was, sort of one of the planning stages, decided it would be great to have, women speakers, and you know, she's being sort of the historian, and she takes a lot of pride in her role as to remind us of, you know, where we came from. So it was nice to have her do that for us.
Right, and she's been on the show before.
Mm-hmm.
And we're speaking with right now.
My name is Sasha Mobley. I am the vice president of the non-tenure track union. In my lame duck session, so you know, Joe Biden and I've exchanged ideas about how that frees us up.
Yeah.
So the new vice president will be Dennis DeLay, who's someone that you see around here. So when you see him, be sure to congratulate him.
We refer to him as Duffy. He does a show on Thursday night.
He knows he's one of my favorite old white guys. and I know to get things done on this campus, I thought, you know, instead of being a trans-ish Filipino woman, it's like, I think it will be more effective speaking truth to power sometimes when we get, you know, the oldest, whitest guy in the room to say, hey, this isn't fair. But I will be working. I'll continue to be working, of course, for the union. But
Yeah, make no mistake now. Everybody out here that knows Sasha knows that she's the real deal. If she's in the room, she's going to command attention and she's going to bring everything to the table. So I want everybody to know how much we appreciate your work and what you do for the campus labor coalition, for your union. I mean, it's really invaluable. So just know that.
Well, it's Gus. It's so much fun to be out there to be meet. I mean, the funnest thing about my position was, you know, none of the responsibility, but all the fun of organizing, and not just our members and who we hope to be members, Joe Petrie. I still want you to sign your card. We need all the support we can get. And that means, you know, when I, you know, going to the AFL-CIO meeting was really exciting. And to see all the representation from the GEO, which, you know, I saw them when they were a baby. I was the first grievance officer with GEO.
Wow.
Yeah. And now that's, you know, 12 years of organizing. Yeah. And now I feel like, you know, the pressure, you know, the pressure is on and we got to get together. And, you know, we've been talking about getting a bat signal so we know, hey, when the lights in the sky, you know, I got my poker chips. We should have late night sessions. Bring in the Matt Kellys and the Dave Becks and Rickies and, you know, a little libation and some visioning for this summer, I think would be really exciting.
Keep
for all
the communication
of us.
Lines open like that, you know. May Day is an important event in all workers around the world. It's International Workers' Day, correct?
Oh, yeah.
As Dorothea mentioned, 129 years since everything kind of went down at Haymarket up there in Chicago area.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, you know, the rest of the world picked up on May Day and celebrates it, but the United States opted to kind of create something else called Labor Day or something.
But don't we still in Illinois have, like, by state law, they have to teach labor history in elementary? And this is a question for Stephanie Sewell, but I think that's, you know, but then how many of our students know about Haymarket? Did you poll them on that when you were?
I mean, that's the one thing is that when I was teaching in Georgia, Haymarket was not something that the students had to know in their standards. So, you know, me just being a labor historian, I always brought it up anyway. But, you know, whenever they take their state test, you know, all that, you know, the standardized testing, labor would never show up. They would have that. Samuel Gompers would be a multiple choice wrong answer, but he would never be a right.
Yeah, wow, you know, that says saying? Everything.
Yeah, the Haymarket took place in Illinois.
Exactly.
Yeah. So I'm talking loud because I'm not on a microphone.
you could share a mic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's the issue. I think that one of the problems I see in education in Illinois is that labor is not central to the high school curriculum of history, especially. Mm-hmm. So I call and challenge a lot of the, especially our new school board that's coming in, that we really need to start going and pressing them about putting labor as a central focus, because there has to be a change in ideas and mentality about labor now that we are up against a juggernaut of Rauner. We just have to it has to be widespread at this point, because this is an assault. This is a war on working people.
Right. And we got a union brother on the Champaign Four County we elected.
Yeah, we do.
So that's, you know, again, press on every front.
Exactly.
You know?
There was a rally on Tuesday, I believe, out at the Workers' Memorial out at Dodds Park, out by Parkland.
Oh, yeah.
And not a lot of people around Champaign County are aware that we do have a Workers' Memorial out there. Everybody knows there's an Olympic Memorial out there to the Olympic athletes, and the Workers is right across the street, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the best-kept secrets around the area, I think, you know.
Yeah.
And, we need to keep doing our part to make sure that people are aware of what's happening out there. So, anyway,
I don't really understand why there's a memorial for Olympics.
Pick it up.
There were some Olympic athletes that came from this area.
Yeah, you know. I mean, do they get killed by their job or what?
No.
You know, I just don't understand.
Well,
that.
The marathon runner who took strychnine in the 1904 did die on the job. But he should have probably not been using strychnine.
Performance enhancing drugs.
Higher, faster, and whatever it takes to get higher and
Sorry,
faster.
Sorry,
I
can tell though, you are more of a sports person probably than I am.
Yeah. today, big sports day today. Yeah. We got the NFL draft. We got the NBA playoffs and we got the big fight tonight. Oh. So everybody's going crazy about sports, but there's so much else going on in the world.
Rock singer memorial.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, that's what I mean.
But there are, of course, labor issues in sport as now our NBA, NBA, players union just lost, I think, an important, hedge, which is no blood testing. And of course, they're going and saying we want a blood test so we can test for human growth hormone, but they're going to be able to basically put a patch on these guys and be able to monitor them. So, you know, it's like monitoring people. They can tell whether you're sleeping, whether you're drinking, the moment that you're getting a lap dance. I don't know what.
Yeah,
it's off the hook in terms of what they're going to kind of surveillance mechanisms, which I think our university will be very, you know, useful in developing those technologies.
Exactly.
Performance enhancing drug cannabis.
Oh, yeah.
It works.
But like I said, these capitalists, they want to control every means to your movement from the minute you're awake to the minute you go to sleep. It's what they do. So putting patches on people, it's the same thing with the old 1984 putting chips in people type thing.
Yeah.
And we're going to pay you this salary. We're going to control everything that you do no matter what.
Based on how many calories you expended.
Oh, yeah.
You know, we're going to pay you a little less. Your calorie count was a little low.
No, seriously, they charge you.
This sounds like a Philip K. Dick novel.
No, really, they charge
Dick
you. If
novel,
you, if
right.
you, if you no, seriously,
the
if, you,
dick
if you're
is
down
the
1 pound,
boss.
They charge you. Like, if you're overweight 1 pound, they fine you.
Yeah.
Just for that.
Yeah.
I mean, they fine you for everything. You find that letter in your mailbox.
Yeah,
I mean,
that's why we got to pay attention to what they're doing to athletes, elite athletes, because they're going to apply the best technologies, but they're going to, you know, bring it to the workers.
Well, okay, that's also a thing that you can have with insurance, possibly.
I think that's one thing people fear when healthcare comes up, no matter if it's government or insurance companies or whatever, that at some point they're going to say, well, you know, it's your fault, you're eating too much. You're not exercising enough.
Right.
So we're not going to cover you.
The fat shame.
Or
you
smoke, you know, you've been smoking for 30 years, something like that.
And when are they going to be measuring when our jobs are causing us stress? Like when we get told we're not going to have a workspace anymore, like happened to GEO students, or, oh, you came here all the way from, you know, across seas and you're told that TA ship you were going to have, oh, it's gone. You're now an hourly with no benefits and no tuition waiver. Deal with that. You got a week before class starts.
Like you say, in the NFL draft, it's happening to a couple athletes that were supposedly first round caliber, but they got tested positive for marijuana, and so that right away they dropped down to the third round or something like that.
Don't get me started on marijuana, because when stuff gets legalized, all that important money going into poor communities is gone, and then it goes to Philip Morris, and then they're gonna capitalize on that too.
Oh,
yeah.
This is an employment issue. If cannabis is ever made legal in Illinois, there was a law passed in the 1980s that will make sure that it cannot be used against you in employment.
Good. Mm.
Because, I remember this, back in the 1980s, there was a bunch of ads started appearing in the newspaper for jobs, and they wanted people who were non-smokers. It wasn't that they didn't want people to smoke on the job. They wanted non-smokers because of their insurance. And so they passed a law that said you can do anything that's legal off the job, you know, without having to worry about being tested or anything for it.
Yeah.
That's such an important thing to know, because I work with the Carol Amon's committee, and we monitor all the bills coming along, and sometimes we forget about the great bills we have. And, you know, believe me, the other side with ALEC, they're organized, they're trying to find every way to undermine us with this, you know, right to work is only the most obvious plank. But, you know, they're showing up in town meetings like Muhammad. They're the ones putting forward these votes. Meanwhile, everyone shows up going, who put this vote? You know, who put this here? Nobody but some, you know, rounder guy came up and put that on the
rice bear.
Yeah.
Rounder.
Air rounder.
Yeah.
Ooh, boy.
Gus, you got some other stories this week?
Man. I mean, like I said, today is a huge day. Of course, the big story is the rebellion in Baltimore, not the riots. But the rebellions, and just to give some.
Well, if it was Europe, it would be clashes with police.
Oh yeah clashes with police.
Like in Turkey and Greece.
Brussels.
Yeah.
Two days ago, 100,000 people rioted.
Exactly.
Yeah. And you know, that's May Day in Europe. You go out and throw rocks at cops.
Yeah.
That is May Day in Europe.
That's real. But of course, you know, and also too, you know, if it was fighting against the British and, you know, the Stamp Act and the Tea Act and stuff, then they're rebels. But the fact that they're fighting against police brutality, they're rioters, meaning that they're spontaneous. There's no objective to their movement. There's no collective argument. Yeah. So what they're doing is the media is devaluing the disillusionment and oppression of these people going out and addressing the fact that they are not citizens in this country. Mm-hmm. They don't have a right to struggle against racial oppression without facing the media blitzkrieg mm-hmm. of you're rioters, you're nothing, you're criminals, you're victims. The president called these people thugs. The president of the United States went out and didn't mention one word about Freddie Gray, but all he said was that they're thugs and they're criminals and they need to stop.
Well, look at what he did to Skip Gates. Someone, you know, cop arrests you, let's have a beer. What's he going to do? He's like, I got the black vote, and I'm not running again, so I might as well just worry about my legacy in my Chicago library now that Rahm got elected.
Yeah. And just to put it into context, into historical and also contemporary context, there's been some talk in Congress about the militarization of police departments that now deploy state-of-the-art military technology distributed from the Pentagon's massive arsenal, but no action to take the tanks away that we're seeing roaming through Baltimore and other areas right now, like in Detroit. So President Obama's Justice Department issued a strongly worded report criticizing the Ferguson Police Department back in the day for its bias, but it couldn't be bothered to press charges against the cops who murdered Mike Brown. So now we're getting into what's going to happen in Baltimore now that we have these six cops who have been indicted. But let's remember, indictment does not mean conviction. So that's the only action to come from officials on the state of the state has been the police. And we know what that has produced. Since the beginning of 2015, law enforcement officers have killed to this day 381 people. 381 people, and we're not even halfway through the calendar year yet. One of these murders was bound to produce the next social explosion. That's what you have going on in Baltimore now. To put it in context, this is a rebellion. These are a group of collective people who are challenging a system that removes them from society. That's exactly what's happening here. Because you're telling me that somebody's going to kill a person, and what's going to happen is they are getting funded. They're going to start up a Kickstarter fundraiser to pay these people hundreds of thousands of dollars for taking a man's life. They severed his spine. And then they made a stop, a suspicious stop, and did these things. And now they're being charged with an indictment. But again, the problem is that somebody's life was taken. And people are taking this and meaning to criminalize the people who are fighting against the system. And we have to make sure that no matter where we go, whenever we have these conversations about police brutality, that we have the conversation into the causes, especially the historical context behind it. Why are people upset? Why are people in the streets rebelling against the system? Because we're going across California to the East Coast where people are being murdered.
Right.
My thing is, it takes these murders for this to occur.
Yeah.
I mean, this isn't a light thing with what you're talking about, people dealing with things all the time. Anyway, we got somebody calling in. Sorry.
I think our guest is calling in here, so we'll get him on the air. Hello, you're on the air. This is WEFT.
Hi, this is Cliff Wilming. I was scheduled to call in.
Yes, Cliff. Glad you called in. You're on the air with the World Labor Hour here at WEFT in Champaign. And, I understand you're out in Colorado?
That's correct. I am in Lafayette, Colorado.
And according to what Dave tells me, you're a former union carpenter and involved in the rank-and-file carpenters' rebellion a few years back?
That's right, yeah. We were, myself, I was in Carpenters Local 1, which is in Chicago, Illinois. We formed Carpenters for a rank-and-file union out there. I was around 2001, 2002. Since I've left the building trades, I'm currently a registered nurse in Colorado.
Excellent. And you're a registered nurse and you're running for a local office out there?
Well, we're considering running a slate of candidates for office. So whether I'm on that slate or not, we don't fully know right now, but I don't know how much into the issue Dave has gotten, but you know, we are essentially out here on the Wattenberg Shale in Colorado, and our community of Lafayette banned the fracking, which is a seriously contentious question for communities out here in Colorado, and we banned fracking in the community here, and were promptly sued by the Colorado Oil and Gas Association. And so
really?
Your community was
sued by the Oil and Gas Corporation?
Oh, yeah. The many communities have been sued by the oil and gas industry out here. In fact, Governor Hickenlooper, who is a Democrat, participated in one of those lawsuits and actually helped the Colorado Oil and Gas Association sue the city of Longmont after they also banned fracking.
Oh, interesting. And so your community is going to continue to fight this against these corporations?
Sure, yeah. You know, it's we're one of many. You know, it's a pretty standard story of, you know, a community that wants to preserve it itself and to, you know, I mean, so there's, we're about 23,000 people out here. It's very family-oriented and essentially moving from the east-westerly into Colorado's Front Range, which is where 95% of the population lives here, as we have some of the largest oil and gas development in the country. And essentially the way it works is that the industry enjoys legal privileges of state preemption, which claim that your community is not allowed to say no to oil and gas development. It really goes further than that. It's not just fracking that enjoys that kind of stuff. But, you know, if you wanted, a few years ago, a community or five Colorado counties actually banned the use of cyanide that was being used in gold mining, and the Supreme Court said that they did not have the legal authority to do that either.
Huh.
So this is a pretty standard kind of competition here because the state is telling our communities what we can and cannot do, and, of course, the state is fully the state government is fully populated by industry sympathizers, and you know, we're not only not allowed to ban fracking in our communities, we're not even allowed to set a living wage higher than the state's living wage.
Yeah.
Yep.
So what, you guys are going to run a slate of members for the city council then? Is that what's going on?
Yeah, so, you know, basically how it works is, you know, like hundreds of communities across the country, you know, the city government right now, to a lesser extent after we elected two of our own, but the city government essentially is not going to budge in terms of enforcement of what they consider the higher law. So, you know, when community members say, hey, look, you know, we're not really interested in breathing benzene and toluene and xylene, you know, for the next 20 years, and the communities want to say no, it's the city government that usually is the messenger that says, well, we don't have the legal authority to create what you want, or, you know, you can't create a sustainable community because the state law forbids it. And so then the city government essentially says, well, so it's, given that we can't say no to things like fracking, well, then, you know, the only thing we're left to do is to regulate it, to make the debate more about how much parts per billion of benzene or we can breathe or setbacks and that sort of thing. So it's kind of been our natural conclusion that as long as the local government is occupied and run by people that are unwilling to enforce what we consider our fundamental rights, which is health, welfare, and safety. And enforcing those rights essentially means that you have to break the state law. And so our position is that to the extent that the state law forbids us from protecting our own community, we're going to have to step up and take those positions in local city government in order for the community to do what is necessary for our own safety. That's essentially how it plays out.
Other communities do that. Richmond, California, their city council is very progressive, and I believe they've had numerous lawsuits and won lawsuits against the Chevron refinery out there.
That's true.
Yes, it's a very similar dynamic, you know, and it's unfortunate. I think that, you know, we're taught as Americans that, you know, our political life should come by helping elect other people to office so that they can kind of, you know, do what's right by the community. But from our position here in Lafayette, the game is so rigged that it really, as long as you have a conventional approach to local office, it really doesn't matter who sits in that office. The law has been written by the corporations. So anyone that's willing to enforce that law will have to execute the will of industries like the oil and gas industry. And so, you know, that's really how it kind of lines up, is that what we found is that, you know, creating a sustainable community is essentially illegal, that fracking is a mandate. And so then it basically comes down to creating a new type of political officer, which views that office as a means to build the community, the grassroots movement, which is very different, I think, than the standard variety of politicians, which are there to ultimately make you feel a little bit better about the situation versus confronting it head on.
Yeah, we were talking earlier a little bit about some of the origins of May Day and, you know, police being called out to protect corporate interests and things like that.
Sure.
You know, Colorado, you've got some instances of things 100 years ago or so. The National Guard was called out and machine gun families and burned tent cities down and things like that out there. Sometimes the citizens have to stand up for their own rights.
Yeah. In fact, where I live is just a couple miles away from the cemetery where the original Columbine massacre took place. And that took place at the Columbine mine. And six miners were killed by the police, because there was a lot of coal, extraction taking place out here 100 years ago. That massacre was, followed by the Ludlow massacre, where there was quite a few other people, women and children included, killed by the National Guard. And so, you know, it begs a conversation about what the role of the police is in our corporate state. And, you know, a lot of how we look at it is, you know, the role of the police is there to keep working people away from the levers of power. And somebody benefits by that, and it's certainly not, you know, the working class. It's the oil and gas industry, and it's the billionaire class.
Yep, the miners. It certainly seems that way sometimes, that's for sure, that they're not there to serve and protect us. They're there to serve and protect corporate interests.
And God, mining companies are like, they're like the worst.
The worst, yeah. All around the world.
Yeah, everywhere. You know what I mean? All through their history, man.
Yeah. Yeah, South America, wherever there's mining going on, you know, even in Europe, the coal mines are just nasty, and China, people are dying in the mines there all the time.
Well, their tactics, I mean, like, there's about the most strong arm industry I think it's ever been.
Hire kids because they're smaller and they can get into smaller work areas and stuff like that, you know, I mean.
Sure. Hundreds. Well, you know, what they're doing is they're doing what benefits their class, and that is what that's profit. That's the language that they speak.
Well, I wish we had the solidarity that the capitalists do.
Yeah.
And I agree.
Our class solidarity, man.
It's easier for them, though, because they're so small.
Well, you know, if
you
think about it.
I mean, you know, it's only 1% of them where
yeah, they can all get together at the country club.
Exactly. That's right.
Well, and they create organs so to discuss and meet and come to strategic planning decisions about what serves them best. You know, they have the World Trade Organization. They have the Transatlantic Business Dialogue. They have the Trans-Pacific Partnership is a strategy that's come out of those meetings. And the working class doesn't have those vehicles. What we're told to accept is that the Democratic Party is somehow going to fight in place of us. And I think that really until the working class, the common community members and the laborers have an international organization to organize behind, I think that we're going to see a lot more of the same.
Well,
I agree. That's got to be built.
You're mentioning the TPP. You're talking about state law overriding your local law.
Yes.
That TPP would override your state law if there would be, say, a foreign-owned company. And I was listening to another show recently, and they were talking about how various corporations would open little branches in a different place so that they could sue where they were at to
for,
get something done.
For future profits.
Yeah, I was like, man.
Possible future profits.
Yeah, we are, we're quite used to multinational industries suing our communities here, locally, and it's done through state law. And, the Trans-Pacific Partnership does that on an international level. It essentially creates a, platform for those industries to overcome national laws. What are you gonna do with that? I mean, really, when we create laws to protect the safety of workers on the workplace, when we, you know, even through the unions and our contracts, we know that the bosses violate those rules and those contracts before the ink is dry. And so it comes down to enforcement. And I think that, you know, what we have to start thinking about is, if and when the Trans-Pacific Partnership passes, how we make it unenforceable. I think that's a pretty big question to put to people. But the way we view that kind of stuff here in Colorado is, you know, if we accommodate the law as it's written, we can say goodbye to all of our working conditions as well as our global environment. These are big stakes.
Yep. We're talking here with Cliff Wilming, and he's out in Colorado. And trying to get a slate of candidates together to run for city council there, and bringing in some of the issues of anti-fracking and relating that to police brutality, which we were talking about earlier in this show, and trying to pull it all together here with the TPP and how corporations are going to maybe run roughshod over our lives. And any other comments there, Cliff?
Well, for one, I would be negligent to get off any interview without extending an enormous amount of gratitude and debt to the real fighters of Baltimore.
Yes.
I think that those people in every capacity showed us what's necessary. And I know that there's some hand-wringing around a few panes of broken glass or a pharmacy that may have come into conflict there, but the way we look at it is those folks in Baltimore elevated the entire country in those actions, and they really cut the Gordian knot in terms of appealing for justice for Freddie Gray out there, and of course that's only one name of thousands. I think that they've shown us a way forward, and it's up to us to, all of us to, live up to the example that was set up there in, Baltimore.
They've been putting up with decades of, police brutality in that community and many other communities around this country for years and years. So it is time for people to sometimes stand up and let their voices be heard.
Well, I think I just think that the daily life without the police brutality and being poor in this country people should be rioting over that. I mean, I'm amazed at the restraint of the people in these communities.
Exactly.
Where it takes multiple murders. How many other people were killed before Freddie Gray?
Well, they're afraid of this idea that, well, they're destroying property, so they're criminals and all this stuff. I wonder how much property Samuel Adams, John Adams, and George Washington destroyed.
Here's another one.
I think they smashed a few windows along the way.
They did a little property damage.
Let's say Baltimore.
I think that some English tea suffered a fatal casualty during that time as well.
Yes. Oh, wow. I saw somebody on the internet the other day, yesterday, and their thing was, well, the Boston Tea Party, they weren't there to steal things. and see, his thing was, they're thugs if they're looting, if they're stealing.
Yeah.
For themselves.
They don't know, whoever that was don't know their history, because the Sons of Liberty, looted all the time.
Well, this guy,
if you ask the British Crown, they would say that the thugs of American colonists, didn't stop at, looting one or two items, that they stole an entire continent from the crown.
But ask the American Indians.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
stole an entire continent.
An American way of life, isn't it? But yes, there's a lot of comparisons to be drawn, and I agree. I think I think that what you're touching on is just the institutionalized poverty of these communities. That we're looking at depression-like conditions over the last 100 years. Yeah. I agree. I think that they've shown incredible restraint. Nobody should have to live like that. Essentially, where in a land where you've got a level of opulence and wealth, we know why. It's because that money has been taken directly from those communities.
Where CEOs make 300 or 500 times what the average worker in their company makes. It's just absurd.
Yeah, well, where's all the big comment going to be when some Baltimore sports team wins or loses some big thing and there's like police cars burning and turned over in another neighborhood?
Yeah.
Which happens quite more often than uprisings by angry people over political reasons.
Yeah,
well, I guess that's an accepted way of setting a cop car on fire.
Yeah, celebrating the World
Series.
It's
not so much about the car itself, it's the motivation behind it. Right?
There you go. Any other comments, Cliff?
No, I just wanted to thank you guys for having me on. I am an Illinois boy, and I even went to college in Parkland out there in Urbana at one time. And,
yeah.
We just want to say hello to all the working class fighters and happy May Day to all of the workers around the world. And, let's get busy creating a trans-Pacific partnership of the working class.
Also, were you a local 47 carpenter?
I was local one in Chicago.
Oh, okay. You didn't work down here. You went to Parkland, though. Okay.
I went to Parkland for about a year down there.
Yeah.
I became a carpenter later on.
Excellent. Well, Cliff, we really appreciate you calling into this World Labor Hour today, and you keep up the good fight out there in Colorado, and keep your enthusiasm rubbing off on your associates out there.
Yeah, you too, guys, and happy May Day.
All right. Thank you. Thanks for calling in.
Bye-bye.
And I think we're just going to go to a quick musical break here. I got a little Bob Marley queued up, and this is
nice.
In solidarity with the folks over there in Baltimore. This is actually called Burning and Looting. So
I love it.
Marley and the Wailers, burning and looting. That's in solidarity with the folks over there in Baltimore.
Yep. And despite what some people, tend to disagree with and don't know their history, is that rebels throughout history, even going back to the revolution, looted when they were engaging in rebellion. So just to put that out there for people who think that because black people are rebelling and looting during their rebelling that they're just thugs and criminals. Well, like I say, the supreme thugs must have been the ones who actually started an imperial war in the American Revolution then. So, but
yeah,
they don't call those thugs or criminals in the history books though.
Look at Russia and Germany, the scorched earth over there in World War II, or Sherman's March to the Sea and stuff like that in the Civil War.
Supreme thuggery.
You got that right. Really?
That's what I mean, you know, based off of just destroying property.
Right.
You know,
yeah.
That was the victory for the Civil War.
Just so people,
when the slaves walked off the plantations and Sherman and the other generals started burning everything
wouldn't have any food to eat.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But again, they're Ulysses S. Grant is on money though for burning property. So.
Yes.
Go figure.
Yeah, it makes you wonder.
So just to put this more in an economic perspective, because a lot of people tend to isolate police brutality. There's a historical trend to that police repression is tied to the political economy, and we have to recognize it as such. In Baltimore, conditions in Baltimore exemplify the immense social inequality that is the defining feature of this American society. It's a great case study for the problems of America. As a whole, Baltimore is ranked the sixth poorest city in the country.
Wow.
In the Sandtown, Winchester area where Freddie Gray was arrested, more than half of the working age population is unemployed.
Wow.
Let me state that again. In the same city or the same area where Freddie Gray was arrested, more than half of the working age population is unemployed. And a third of all residential properties are vacant or abandoned.
Wow.
So, I mean, another one, a report put out by the city in 2011 found that nearly one third of all families in the neighborhood live in poverty. So to regulate this social catastrophe, the police, which is tied directly to the political economy, have been armed to the teeth and given free rein to terrorize the population. Arrest, beatings, harassment are a daily reality for black people. That's what I'm trying to tell for people who've never experienced this type of behavior. I was born and raised in Atlanta, so I've seen these things over and over again. Experience what these Baltimore people have to deal with. This is a daily reality, and it's a historical reality for African Americans in Baltimore and other major cities to experience beatings, arrests, and murder. I mean, this is a reality that people tend to isolate away from other things. A report by the Baltimore Sun last year found that the city paid out $5.7 million since 2011 over lawsuits related to police violence. Officers have battered dozens of residents who suffer broken bones, jaws, noses, arms, legs, ankles, head trauma, organ failure, and even death, coming during questionable arrests. And most of those arrests were for non-violent crimes, as violent crime is down across the country. But again, that's just something that we just have to discuss, and we're going to address this problem. We have to address it as a problem of the system and not a couple of police here and there. It's the way the police system operates in relation to the political economy and how working class people are being terrorized. And that's the way we have to address it.
It's not just in Baltimore.
It's a national problem, but it's a global problem.
It's an increasing militarization of the police departments all around the world. Look at the strikers in South Africa that they shot, 30 of them a couple years ago up there.
Because
in Chicago, they just settled a lawsuit for $5 million for that kid McDonald that they, 17 shots fired by one cop one kid up there, and they settled it for $5
million. $5 million. And again, and that's what we need to do. We need to create studies that shows how much money is paid out to victims of police brutality. Because like I said right here, you have over $5 million paid out in 1 year in Baltimore to victims of police brutality to sell out of court. So I wonder what those stats look like if we go across the country.
In Chicago, part of that $5 million settlement in this one case was, so that the video did not get released. So they're going to try and keep that video hidden from the American public there.
Yeah. Just to update as well, on April 27th, the murders continue because another individual was killed, Terrence Killam was shot 10 times. They say the federal agents came to his home to serve an arrest warrant. His hands were in his pocket and he was getting ready to put his hands up and his fists were clenched. The officers claimed he had a hammer in his hand.
Jeez.
They shot him twice and then they finished him and shot him 8 more times. Then they handcuffed his dead body.
Wow.
Yeah.
Because he might have had a hammer.
Yeah,
because
he might have had a hammer. So, I mean, this just, and so the people in Detroit are rallying today and they rallied yesterday as well as this is another incident. I mean, like I said, it's some new person's life gone every day.
Actually, a hammer is a really crappy tool. I mean, weapon.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of short and.
Yeah. It would be
maybe
tough.
Maybe he's real good at throwing it. I don't know.
And that's the thing. The point is that there was no hammer at the scene.
Yeah.
There was nothing
well,
there.
Even if there was a hammer, yeah. It's a totally inappropriate response.
Exactly.
You know,
did you say 300 and some people killed by police already?
382 now. And this is the official report. Like, we don't know what's happening behind the scenes.
Right.
But that's just the official report out. 381, and we're not even... I can't even do the math right now, but.
We're just a third of the way through the year. We're just starting to, you know, fifth month here.
Man, so. Like I said, these are new nadir numbers. This is what one of my colleagues, Sundiata Chajua, talks about, is that we're talking about in the nadir period, an African American was killed every 36 hours. Now we're at every 28 hours.
Only had about 100 days so far this year, 120
exactly.
days, and you're telling me 382 people have been killed. So we're talking 3 per day at this point,
One every 8 hours now. So we're talking about the fact that we can't address this as Baltimore indicting 6 cops.
Right.
That has nothing to do with this. The point is that there is a system that has to be restructured. Indicting a couple of cops in one area is not going to stop police brutality and is not going to bring these people's lives back. We have to restructure how police operate in the country, and that will be the progressive step moving forward. That's the way we have to address this.
How do we do that? Citizens review councils, things like that?
Policing our own communities.
Yes.
One of the best things that I've seen happening in Dallas right now is the Huey P. Newton Gun Club, who what they do is every other day, they have exercise sessions and they actually walk their communities and police them themselves. And there has been little to no crime in that community since they started doing that. They started it last year. And one of the things I'm going to start doing research on, because I want to write a paper on it, is the Huey P. Newton Gun Club and understand how it's not just a contemporary phenomenon, but it's also something that happened back in Atlanta and Chicago back in the day when people were tired of cops coming into their neighborhoods and killing. They would just start policing their own communities. And if you came into the neighborhood as a cop, then more than likely, it was very difficult for you to get out of that community because of the historical nature of them killing the community members. So they would not let you leave if you were killing their community members there. So just policing the neighborhood so that people are safe and people are building community and doing that. So I think it's just something that people can do is that we just advocate these policing ourselves rituals, because we all know what the police are here for. The police are here to protect private property. We're here to protect people's lives, lives over property. So
there's several examples in Baltimore. There was a group of guys wearing t-shirts, 300 men march.
Mm-hmm.
And they got shown quite prominently on Monday night, I think, on some of the TV networks and stuff. And people might have thought that they were some of the thugs out there and stuff. But if you did a little research, they had been meeting for several days and a week.
Oh, yeah.
And they were advocating nonviolence,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
You saw a lot of ministers out there on the street talking to the protesters, talking to the police.
They're not going to show the ministers talking. They're not going to show any of the protesters talking or meeting or actually chanting. They're not going to talk about Freddie Gray. All they're going to keep showing on news are the burning buildings and the burning cars without context. And that's such a great trickery of history by imperialists and capitalists, is to take the context away from an event so that the masses cannot understand what's going on in said event. Because that creates this idea of what Frantz Fanon was talking about, this common sense that people just start believing things they see without actually having context or having good sense. And that good sense is what brings people together to fight issues that they see as critical challenges against their livelihood.
Oh, here's what you're talking about on acid and crack and steroids. Is the right wing nut jobs. have this huge conspiracy theory now that this Baltimore thing was all staged.
Oh, yeah, here it comes.
Okay.
Yeah.
But you know why it was staged? To distract us from the TPP.
Okay.
Now, I'm glad they're against the TPP, but I'll tell you what, it's not going to take a riot in Baltimore or anywhere to distract the American people from things like that. We do have Kardashians. We have,
yes.
And I'm sorry, our last guest might disagree. We have athletics to distract us. We have rock music, one of my favorite things. We have movies. We have misinformation. We have news media that just won't even bring, and a political class that just won't even talk about TPP.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't need a staged riot. Oh yeah, they've got all the FEMA actors picked out. This stuff just—it drives me up a wall.
Yeah,
man, that people there are a substantial number of people that think things like this.
Yeah, I've already seen threads online about that already. That this is a staged event for the government to do.
I don't know what to take away. They're not going to take away people's guns with it. No, but, and to distract from the TPP.
Wasn't that the big conspiracy theory behind Sandy Hook, that they were conspiring to take guns away from Americans? The gun ownership now has skyrocketed since Sandy Hook, and there hasn't been one gun law passed anywhere in the country since Sandy Hook. So the conspiracy nuts continue to be so wrong about everything. It's just
Don't get me wrong. On the other hand, I am really upset that the establishment of this country wants me to believe that Lee Harvey Oswald shot John Kennedy and that 19 Arabs all got together and just flew these planes into buildings, on their own, this staging stuff is just ridiculous.
Yeah, staging massacres and rebellions and it's utterly ridiculous, especially when his police brutality has such a foundation in this country. It's been going on since slavery that this stuff has been going on. And all of a sudden people want to stage the fact that people are upset about it. People have rebelling for so long, but it's just getting news media attention now because it's such a systemic crisis at this point, because like Bob was saying, it's happening so often now, it's three a day. I mean, at that intensity level, you're going to have more media coverage because of,
Well, there's more cameras out there, South Carolina, where they had the film of the cop shooting the guy eight times.
And they planted something on them.
Yeah, while he's running away, So the more cameras that are out there, the more truth that'll come out there. So.
Well, I'm getting tired of the lies. That's like the other guy that was in the van, and they made this thing up where he was saying that he thought that Freddie Gray was beating himself back and forth. I mean, that is just, what? Nobody would even think of that. Oh, I'm going to beat myself back and forth so I can make up some story about the cops driving. Mm-hmm. And besides that, that guy wasn't in there very long.
Exactly.
He couldn't even see him. Yeah, see, they even made a stop that was picked up on a private security camera. And he said that after he got in, they went straight to the police station. Mm-hmm. So there was a substantial period where that guy wasn't even around. And he didn't get to see anything anyway.
I'm
starting to sputter.
I mean, it's just asinine to this point to where it's either people don't want to see the truth because of the foundational inequalities in the system. This system breeds inequality so that people they are blinded by it. A lot of people don't want to admit the fact that the police that are here to protect us are actually murdering people to support, the political economy agenda. Nobody wants to admit that. It takes away our security knowing that the police force who we're told are supposed to be protecting us are actually killing people and then planting evidence and hiding things. And they've been doing this historically for hundreds of years. People are afraid to admit that. So that's why it's so hard to get it through people's heads. And that's why we have to continue to have these rebellions and continue to have these discussions and continue publishing material proving that this is a real trend.
Well, with that, we'll wrap up the World Labor Hour for today. And as Dave Johnson typically says, work safe and power to the people.
Power to the people.
We'll be joining the Union Edge here, already in progress, right here on
WEFT
in Champaign. Very well.